You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger, the Heliocopter episode. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light. I am J.D. Rieger. This week on the show, we're talking to my friend and former co-worker Sean Rauter. Sean is a Chicago musician and songwriter. Most recently, he's played in the groups Badge 212, General Joystick, and now Heliocopter, a pop punk or I guess I will say emo duo that also includes me. Sean and I have a great conversation about our collaborative process during the pandemic, his other two projects, and a freak skateboarding accident, or longboarding accident more accurately, that has temporarily derailed his life just a little bit. But before we get to the interview, I want to play you the single that Sean and I made together as Heliocopter. You can find it on Spotify or at heliocopter.bandcamp.com. That's heliocopter.bandcamp.com. Heliocopter is a Barney Fife mispronunciation of helicopter, by the way. So here it is, our song, The Sunken Road.
Yeah.
And now here's me and Sean.
Sean, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, JD. How's it going?
And it's going well. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Happy to be on the Back to the Light.
I'm happy to have you, man. You've been a supporter since the beginning.
Well, yeah, lots of very interesting content, and I just like the way you kind of, you know, narrate and orchestrate these talks. You have a real knack for it, and it's very enjoyable to listen to.
Thanks, man. Well, let's talk about the song that we did together under the name Heliocopter.
Sure.
Since the song started with you, I'd like to ask you about, you know, from your end, what was the origin of that song?
Oh, so like lots of people, I just have files in my phone of little ideas here and there, just like either a guitar hook or a vocal melody. And I think this one was a guitar hook that I had in my phone, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should develop this one. And I think at the time you were actively reaching out over Facebook, kind of like hosting a open collaboration with whoever's, you know, interested. And I hit you up. I'm like, hey, I'd love to do this. I've been kind of dry in my creativity lately, and this would be an excellent opportunity to get back into things and have some fun with writing a song. And we haven't, until that point, we hadn't really worked together in a musical sense. So I just kind of was chomping at the bit, pulled up my my files of little ideas, and I just picked one and rolled with it.
And from a musical perspective, what would you say, like, are your influences in writing that song?
So I've been very indulgent in listening to emo and pop punk in the last year, 2 years. I kind of pushed it away for a while, and just because you'll get a certain rap or, you know, bad rap from some folks. And I kind of let that get to me and let that stop myself from enjoying it. And then when I started working at the record store again, I got back to the, you know, core of who I am and how that all that emo music has like shaped me as a songwriter. And I kind of had a renaissance with it, and I was just very excited to get back into it. And I no longer really cared about, you know, people who don't enjoy that genre as much or don't enjoy that style. I kind of just put that aside and was able just to create.
What does emo mean to you? Because I think it means different things to different folks. Like when I was coming up, emo meant Fugazi, which is I don't think that's what it means to you when you say emo.
Right. I'm not as knowledgeable on like all the waves of emo. I know there's, you know, pinpoint moments where it's like first wave, second wave, all the way up to like fourth or fifth even. But for me, emo has always meant worrying about creating the raw emotion, style over substance in some cases. Just, you know, how does the song make you feel? That's like paramount for me if I'm trying to write a song in the emo genre. It's like I want to instill a certain emotive flair. And sometimes lyrics and the actual instrumental music can kind of take a backseat to that, which is, you know, good and bad.
It can be a whatever you make it kind of a situation.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, just, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of the listener and trying to think about how the song and the drops and the changes will hit the listener and hopefully blow the back of their head off.
Had you done much recording with or collaborating remotely before, or was this the first time that you'd ever like kind of bounced files, you know, over the internet with somebody?
I would say this is the first time I've gotten all the way to the end of a song with bouncing files back and forth. I've had some collaborators who, for one reason or another, we kind of got sidetracked and, you know, hit a roadblock, and then we never got to publishing. But this is the first one where we, you know, went from cradle to grave, you know, successfully.
Hopefully not grave.
Well, you know, probably a bad choice of words there. But yeah, just start to finish, we, you know, dotted all of our I's, crossed the T's, and we're able to make a song that I'm very proud of and happy to have worked with you on that.
Yeah, man.
Before that,
me too.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. But before that is, you know, I'm always in the room with my other songwriters and musicians, and we kind of bounce everything off of each other in a face-to-face setting. And then we just use, you know, one DAW to get it all done, and we're both there.
One thing that was interesting in the collaboration for me was that, you know, since it was your song, I felt like it was kind of a bold move to write lyrics for it. And I was wondering, you know, was that a step that surprised you? And also, what was it like for you expanding on those lyrics and building out the rest of the song?
Yeah, I got to agree that was an unconventional way. You know, usually since I started the file, you would think that I would, you know, also have some lyrics in mind for it too, but I just had that instrumental. I just developed that that original hook that I had saved on my phone, and I wasn't sure what you were going to bounce back to me when you got the file, and I was really thrilled with the lyrics and vocal style that you sent back, and it was almost like a time travel situation for me, because you had like kind of a... you know, almost Civil War era.
Not almost.
Oh yes, straight on Civil War era.
There's some very literal Civil War.
You know, Sherman is mentioned and whatnot.
Shiloh.
Yep. And
Did you know what Shiloh was before I sent you these lyrics?
No, I did not actually. My history teachers would be upset with me on that, but I did some research afterwards and got to, you know that a little bit better. But I definitely was picking up on the, you know, the loss and the kind of like the heartbroken sadness of some of those lines, and I kind of latched onto that. And then just I was having trouble like kind of following that same era, so I said, you know what, I'm just going to bring it into the, you know, contemporary age. And I kind of disregarded the, you know, 1860s vibe we had going there, but I held on to that same emotion that you created originally.
I think you did a great job with it. I was really surprised when you sent it back to me with all of your lyrical and, you know, melodic additions and stuff. I thought it, you know, it sounded like, you know, we were in the room writing that song together, even though we weren't at all. I'm really proud of it too, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. I share that feeling, and, it was very contagious. Like, how long did it take us to complete that? Was that...
I mean, I think we bounced it back a few times. You know, I think I took two or three, you know, stabs at it. Like, I sent it back to you the first time with some guitars and those lyrics and stuff on there. And then you sent it back to me with your stuff on there. And then I sent it back to you with, you know, the synthesizer stuff on there.
Right.
And then you added more stuff. And I think that was it after that.
Okay. But yeah, it's just... Every time we added more, it just made me more excited to work on it and get it done and, you know, show it to people. I was constantly, you know, showing it to some of my homies and, hey, look what I'm working on with this legendary guy from Memphis, you know.
I'll stop with that.
But, yeah, it was a joy to work on. And I guess I brought it into that digital age. I was like talking about writing letters and busy signals and cell phones and voicemails. And
well,
like my
writing letters fits right in. I mean, that's very much of the Civil War tradition, you know, part of the story is, you know, soldiers writing letters home. So I thought that fit right in, actually.
True. Yeah. I guess that is a little bit of a bridge between the two. Yeah, it was a joy. I think we maybe got that done in a month's time.
Yeah. I mean, not even actual work time, but.
Oh yeah. Work time. Maybe it was more something like.
A week or so, you know, maybe. Yeah. Well, I don't want to focus entirely on what we've done together because, I mean, it was just the one song. Oh, what? You got something else?
I do want to ask you about one thing that mystified me. There's some sort of bowed guitar that you play. Mm-hmm. I had never heard anyone, maybe besides like watching videos of Jimmy Page. I've never heard anyone like play guitar like that. How did you create those kind of like violin-esque sounds off your guitar?
Oh, it's an Evo with some distortion and lots of reverb and a little bit of like a delay also. But yeah, I use an Evo. Sometimes
what
I use it.
Exactly, is an Evo? Asking for a friend. I know what it is, of course, but
I mean, it's a little magnetic thing that you put on the guitar strings, and it kind of makes them vibrate in a way that sounds like they're being bowed.
That is awesome. I've never really heard of that before.
Yeah, man. Really? You've
never heard of an Ebow? Yeah.
There's a famous REM song called Ebow the Letter that has Ebow guitar all over it. But yeah, it's in the 90s. They were really big. Oh, boy. All right. Well, now that I feel you've made me feel old, Sean, and I've had to explain what an Ebow is, let's talk about some of your other bands. One of which I don't know a whole lot about, which was Badge 212. Is that still the name of that band?
Yeah, it's the band Badge 212 was a kind of a group of friends that got together right as I started learning guitar and right as I started getting interested in music. It was a name for like the collective that would get together, and we'd usually jam outside. We'd find exposed outlets, set up really, really beat up drums, and we would just have fun with music and, you know, either play covers or noodle on the spot. And it was really enjoyable for me, who was learning, where we would be like in an abandoned area with an outlet exposed, and I would feel like I can kind of learn in peace, and I didn't really feel any judgment from any of my friends who were there, and I was very bad at the time.
But you guys still play, don't you? Or wrong in thinking that?
Yeah, so okay. This was like more maybe like 2011, 2012, when we were kind of just playing together and never played a show before. And then 2013 and 2014, we're starting to feel a little bit more confident in, you know, our jamming abilities, and we want to write songs and learn more about recording and publishing. So we came out with a couple albums. The first one we toured was Revenge of the Style, and by touring, I mean we went as far as like Stevens Point, Wisconsin was the farthest we went. We went downstate in Illinois as well. But yeah, it's Adam Kowalski and I, who is a good friend of mine and a longtime collaborator. It was just us two at the beginning, and then we kind of recruited some other folks along the way. One guy you know who played in our band is Luke Dahlgren, another great friend of mine.
I know Luke.
And coworker. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Luke's been playing some bass on my new record, actually.
Oh, can't wait to hear that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then we kind of gained steam, and we entered some Battle of the Bands, and we did fairly well. We got third place at a Battle of the Bands back in 2014, and that was just, you know, it was never really about the, you know, winning anything, but it was just so every time we got through another round, we got through like four rounds to get to the finals. And every single time we got through, we're like, I can't believe we made another round. This is amazing. You know, we were playing in an abandoned parking garage, you know, last year, and now we're able to kind of play in front of our friends and have a great time with it. It was just kind of like the first collaboration I was involved with, and it really kicked off a lot of musical ideas for me.
Well, that's cool. And you're playing with a group now called General Joystick, right? And you have a show coming up that's going to be streaming.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a friend of mine, Ken Fritz. He's been masterminding this band General Joystick since about 2011 or 2012, I would say, or maybe even sooner than that. He's going to be mad at me for not knowing this, but yeah, he writes all the music. He's very talented at, you know, coming up with hooks, and he's also very good at the notation side. All of his songs he has tabs for. And I joined the band in late 2019, about this time last year. And it was kind of daunting for me to think about, you know, I'm going to have to learn these songs, and this is, you know, I'm not the most accomplished music theory guy, so it's not going to be, you know, overnight for me.
Very intricate arrangements from what I've seen. I've seen some live footage of you guys, and it's very complex stuff.
Yeah. There's a lot going on. Everything's very like regimented. But if you break down each individual piece, the guitar hooks and whatnot they're not crazy complex. You know, once you break it down piece by piece, you know, intro into the first verse and whatnot, it's very manageable for me. And coming from kind of I didn't grow up learning any instruments, so I've always been a little bit insecure in my ability, to play and to learn. I always kind of feel like I'm a student who's been held back a couple of grades in that regard. I joined up in 2019.
Let's pause right there. Actually, why do you think that is that you feel that way? Why do you, what do you mean by a student that's been held back?
Well, a lot of the folks that I've collaborated with and jammed with, they started playing guitar when they were, you know, in sixth grade, or maybe they were in concert band or jazz band in school. And during those times, I was more of like a full-fledged athlete, kind of not even giving music the time of day. And then by the time I finally came around to music and opened my mind to it, I was 18 years old and I just graduated high school. And I think I was actually playing Guitar Hero at the moment I decided I wanted to play music. And I think I passed some level on expert mode and like, there we go, you know, what's next after that? And I started thinking to myself, I'm like, well, I guess I could try to play a real guitar. But yeah, so whenever I've like been in a room with someone who's had a much longer history with music or with an instrument, it kind of affects me. Like I have that in the back of my mind, like I'm gonna have to work maybe twice as hard to play this riff that, you know, this other musician is playing. But maybe that's not the case. Maybe that's more of just a, you know, deep-rooted insecurity that I should let go of.
Maybe. I mean, it sounds like you've got, you know, a healthy chip on your shoulder, but let me tell you that, you know, you're a pretty good guitar player, Sean. You don't have to worry so much.
Thanks, JD. I appreciate that.
Well, anyway, back to General Joystick. When is the show that you guys have coming up that's going to be streaming?
So we're going to be live streaming a show on September 18th, a Friday. We're going to be starting at 8 p.m.
Where can folks see that?
So they go to our General Joystick Facebook page. We might be doing it through Facebook, or we might create like a YouTube live link and post it to Facebook. But either way, you can see it at General Joystick Facebook.
Time out. Before we hear a quick commercial and then the rest of the interview with Sean, I have to ask you to check out patreon.com/JD Rieger. That's patreon.com/JD Rieger. And become a supporter of me and the show. Subscribers to the Patreon can get access to ad-free versions of this show, exclusive music content, and more. Also, if you know someone who might enjoy this episode or the show in general, please feel free to share it. Everything helps. And now, here's the ad.
The next thing I want to ask you about is something more personal, Sean, and that is the injury that you've been, I guess you are still actively dealing with. Tell me the story. When and what happened to you?
So June 2nd over the summer, I was longboarding with a friend of mine, something I do quite often. I've been longboarding for 10 years, and for anyone who doesn't know, it's just a longer skateboard built for cruising as opposed to tricks. Lots of folks like to do downhill, like high-speed longboarding. Others like to just cruise on a boardwalk and, you know, go 2 miles an hour. I was with a friend of mine, and we were just longboarding through my hometown here, Arlington Heights, where I live. And I was taking a turn, kind of hit a little piece of scaffolding or a metal support rail that was on the pavement that I didn't see. And my front wheel hit that, never saw it. I fell off the board, you know, felt like a shockwave go through my body, like starting from my feet and traveled all the way up to my brain. And like instantly I knew something was very wrong, but I didn't know what yet. And As I like finished the tumble and looked down at my right foot, it was just, you know, as crooked as can be.
Oh.
Kind of almost like a cartoon, like a way like you'd see a Bugs Bunny break a leg or something like that.
Oh, man.
But yeah, then my friend, you know, he looked down too. We really didn't have to say anything. He called 911 immediately, and we had an ambulance come over and wheel me off. But yeah, it was such a blissful, sunny day, and then just turned into, like, you know, a worst nightmare.
Had you ever been injured skateboarding or longboarding before?
I had one fall where I had broken some ribs. I was doing like a downhill through a parking garage. Very ill-advised. If anyone were to do this, please make sure you wear a helmet and ample protection on, you know, shin guards, elbow guards, and anything else you can get, knee guards. But yeah, one time I was doing a downhill from the top deck of a parking garage, and about halfway down, I hit a rock, and the rock got lodged in my wheel. Same thing, the board stopped. I kept going, and I kind of did like a head first slide in baseball, just across the pavement.
Ow.
But yeah, I'd broken some ribs on my left side.
So you were well aware of the risks of longboarding at this point.
Oh yeah, it's you kind of sign off when you buy a longboard. You know what you're getting into, and I've done a lot of like high speed longboarding and more risky stuff than what I was doing that day. That day I was just, you know, cruising very low speeds. I didn't really anticipate, you know, falling off, and maybe that was part of the problem. Maybe that was why I fell so awkwardly off the board. And that probably contributed to, you know, the break. If I was a little bit more, if I had some more anticipation and I was a little bit more responsible about it, I probably just would have rolled off like any other time. And I can't tell you how many times I've rolled off a longboard. It's kind of part of the sport is falling.
Right. Now I've played enough Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
So your friend calls the ambulance, you get to the hospital, and then you find out the extent of your injuries, which are?
Well, the funny thing I discovered about getting to the hospital, the first person that visits you is someone from billing, which just blew my mind.
That's, yep.
I was in the hallway of the ER, and
that determines your level of care, sir.
Right. There's a nurse. Right. Yeah. How much money you got? We're either going to get you Motrin or maybe something more expensive for you. But, yeah. There's one nurse who was, in a, like a supply area, and he was gathering, I think, morphine and a needle and other stuff. And before he could complete his task and get back to me and deliver some pain medication, yeah, someone from billing walked up and was like, you know, what kind of insurance do you have? Can we get your photo ID? Can we have this? Can we have that? Can we have a copay? I'm like, copay? Like, do you see my leg? Like, my wallet's in on the broken side of, you know, is in the butt pocket of my broken leg right now. I really don't want to disturb that. So it's just wild to me to see kind of the what drives a hospital and.
Well, that's how
large billing is a part of that.
That's where we're at in America right now, man.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. It's a rough
back
state.
To your story.
Right. Yeah. So extent of the injuries, I have the ER doctor come around and he explains and takes an x-ray and explains that, you know, your tibia and fibula are both broken. Your ankle is dislocated. And I believe that tibia was almost through the skin. At that point, I'm sorry to get graphic, but it was almost a compound fracture, I believe they call that, but it just barely didn't puncture through. And they said, you know, we'll have to definitely admit you to the hospital, keep you overnight, and keep delivering pain medication until we can get you into surgery. And they could, you know, realign your bones and put in some titanium parts to hold everything together while you're healing, and then we'll eventually get you out of here. And it was about a 3-day process where they completed that. And after I got over like the billing part of the hospital, there was a lot of people who were looking out for me. was very thankful for the service I got. But there was also points where I realized, you know, this isn't a perfect science. There's, you know, there's still a lot of
trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's the real world for sure. It's, you know, not a textbook.
Well, from there, what was you had a pretty good prognosis from there after your first procedure, correct?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The swelling in my my right ankle was very bad. After I came out of surgery, I could not feel my foot. I couldn't feel it for about 20 hours after that, and that was very, very worrying, and it was giving me a lot of paranoia. I didn't care about the pain so much, like when am I going to be able to wiggle my toe again, and it, you know, should I, what if it doesn't, what if the feeling doesn't come back? And like I was saying earlier about, you know, hospital care not being a perfect science, when I was in the ER, I was there for about 6 hours before I got to a hospital bed and got admitted. No one elevated my leg, and I was elevating my leg with like the backpack I had. And my partner, Jean, who's a nurse, is on the phone with me at different points. And she's kind of giving me her advice and, giving me things to make sure I do. And the first thing she said is, you know, make sure your broken leg is elevated. So swelling can go down. And then once there's less swelling, the surgery goes better. And it just kind of was like a linchpin for a lot of different things. And I didn't get any elevation on my leg for like 6 hours, and the swelling was just through the roof. And I was very unhappy about that. And I don't know, I just gave me this feeling that no one was looking out for me, like for a very basic thing. I would ask for pillows and they would tell me, this is the ER, we don't have pillows. Someone finally got me like a very thin bed sheet and folded it up a couple times, so it was like about 6 inches of elevation.
Yikes.
But yeah, once I got out, prognosis was looking good. I think they told me is 3 months in total for the bone to heal. But you'd be walking on a boot after 6 weeks, maybe 7 weeks.
But that's not exactly how it turned out.
No, there's something else in store for me, another visit back to the hospital. As I was transitioning to the boot, I was back to work on crutches at some points, like at a chair most of the day, doing seated work. And then I was getting increasingly more mobile, and I was walking around in this boot they gave me for support. And as time was going on, I developed like some redness, like an infection in the surgical site where on the right side of my right ankle, where they had, you know, installed all the titanium. And at first it was just, you know, the size of a mosquito bite. But the redness kept getting larger, and I immediately, you know, told my surgeon about it, and I got an appointment with, a wound care clinic. And this wound care clinic was watching over me for about 3 weeks, and they were giving me things like silver gel, which is like is better than Neosporin kind of gel to put over the wound. And I also got prescribed antibiotic pills that were like a general antibiotic. And through this process where I was at the wound clinic, again, I realized, like, you know, healthcare is definitely not a perfect science. The hospital is... you know, it's not a perfect treatment process every time. They never cultured the bacteria that was growing, the actual infection. And this is something that my partner, Jean, who's a nurse, was telling me they should have done on day one. It's like, why didn't they take a culture of the bacteria in your leg? That way they can find out exactly what it is and treat it specifically. They didn't do that for the 3 weeks I was seeing the wound care clinic. And eventually the infection got so bad that they drew a border around the red area. And I think it was the Wednesday before the Thursday that I went back to the ER. They said, you know, if the redness goes outside of this border we drew, just go right to the ER. Don't call us. Just get it taken care of. And yeah, that's when I went in. I think it was about August 10th, I got readmitted.
And is that where the story ends, or have there, are you doing well at this point, or have there been more complications since then?
I'm doing very well now. I'm very thankful that the infection has receded. But when I went back into the ER,
me too.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. I went back into the ER. It was about a 5-day stay of, you know, very, very uncomfortable conditions. One of which is, you know, I feel for anyone who's having any health issues right now and has to be at the hospital. One big thing that's going on that we all know about is COVID. When I was in the hospital, no one was allowed to visit me. When my partner dropped me off, she wasn't allowed to stand, you know, in any part of the ER. So she dropped me off like at the door, and I limped in, and it was just a very lonely process.
Oh man, that sounds like torture for me, honestly. I'm not good in lonely situations.
Yeah, my heart goes out to anyone, you know, who has to enjoy an extended stay right now at a hospital. It makes you realize how much we rely on, you know, friends and loved ones when times get rough. You know, you just want to turn to someone and say, this sucks. You just want to vent it out and, I don't know, feel their support. And that usually makes things a lot better. But yeah, I was lucky that I was able to FaceTime a lot of people in the hospital. At one point, a family member of mine dropped off a laptop for me, so I was able to, you know, work on some things there. And I even worked on a couple, you know, music-related things during the 5 days. But yeah, I was starting to lose my mind, and the hardest part for me was advocating for myself alone, because I was dealing with some pain medications that were kind of felt like they were warping my mind a little bit. And there's a lot of high risk things I had to sign off on, like with anesthesia. And I had a second surgery when I was in for the infection. And there's a lot of things that, for example, the antibiotics that they were giving me was something called vancomycin. And when I told Gene that I was about to take this vancomycin for this raging infection, she's like, absolutely do not take that. You know, I've had so many patients have even more complications in the infection, you know, kidney trouble and other organ issues due to the side effects of powerful antibiotics. And all of a sudden I was, you know, put between, I have this doctor who's telling me that vancomycin's the only way forward, and, you know, the person I love most in the world is telling me don't take it. Is like, it's a very scary situation to be in.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so just like being so in the hot seat for the... Oh, well, that was a tricky decision. I ended up asking the doctor to, like, explain more of the side effects and explain how those related to me. And I ultimately went with the vancomycin. Gene, I'm sorry. I would love to take your side on that one. But the way they explained it to me is that since I'm younger compared to most people who are taking this antibiotic, my body can withstand a little bit more,
you know, punishment.
Exactly. And the reason I took it was the doctor, he said, this is MSRA until proven otherwise. This is, you know, I think he threw out some other very deadly diseases. I think he might even mention like things like swine flu. He rattled off like 5 or 6 things that the infection, or not, maybe not swine flu, but a couple other conditions that he rattled off that my leg could possibly have. And they were very, very scary, conditions to hear. And he said, this is like a preventative measure we have to take to make sure you know, don't die. So I guess my reasoning for going with the punishing vancomycin treatment was just to make it back home at the end of the day.
Well, hopefully you guys are okay. No lingering issues there from the antibiotic decision.
No, yeah, we're all good. We're thick as thieves.
So yeah, which brings me to my next question. Previous to the injury, you and your partner were planning on moving to Oregon, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, we visited Oregon back in May, and we had a terrific time there, and we really enjoyed all the nature. We hiked to a waterfall called Obiqua Falls. If anyone ever has the chance, please go. It's on private property, in just outside of Portland in Oregon. I think it's south, about 30-40 minutes from Portland. And
I don't know if we went to that one, but Jen and I went to several waterfalls in the River Gorge area that's outside of Portland.
Yeah,
it's beautiful country.
Yeah, there's so many waterfalls. I had no idea before we went out there and learned more about the area.
Yeah, they're seemingly everywhere.
Absolutely. And this Obiqua Falls is on private property, but the whoever owns it has made it available 24/7 to anyone who wants to hike there. So it's not quite like a, you know, national park. It's kind of a more in between thing, and there's, you know, less regulations for the roads and pathways to the waterfall, so he's got to be a little more careful about that. But it is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And we had a bright sunny day when we were there, and you know, the mist coming off the waterfall, you could see every color of the rainbow, you know, through the mist. And you know, just hugging and kissing the person you love at the base of a waterfall, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, man, I know that's real. Well, so this injury though derailed your plans.
Absolutely. It derailed my plans in a time sense, whereas, you know, I want to be healthy to travel and drive across the country, because we're going to, you know, we're not going to take a whole lot with us, but we need to take, you know, a good chunk of things. I can't be driving with a boot on my leg. And our original plan was to be out there, you know, kind of start of September, around this time. But with the injury, we had to put things indefinitely on hold. And another aspect is, which I'm still figuring out, is the money that I have to pay for all the fine services and titanium that I got for my broken ankle and the infection. I'm lucky enough where I have insurance, and I believe, you know, a good chunk will be absorbed by the insurance, but my plan isn't.
But insurance doesn't cover everything. Believe me, I know.
Absolutely. And so I'm still figuring out how, you know, how much I have to pay. And maybe there's a, you know, I'm looking into like payment plans for the money I owe, and possibly challenging some of the charges on my hospital bill, because it's my belief that perhaps the wound clinic wasn't doing everything they could have been doing to prevent the infection. And I feel like, you know, there's perhaps some fault there. And so I might be looking to challenge a couple of the charges, but ultimately I will have to pay a considerable amount. And we've put our move plans just on hold so I can get that in check. But we want to go sooner than later. We're hoping to, best case scenario, maybe still move out there second half of October.
Oh, so, wow. That's pretty soon.
Pretty soon. But, you know, the worst case, if the infection does come back, you know, then it would be more of a longer time to wait before we can go. And then that would put us in winter. And
so it still remains to be seen.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man, I wish you the best of luck with that, and I hope everything works out. I hope you guys get to move out there, you know, as soon as you're, you know, wanting to.
Absolutely. And right when the infection came, like, raging back, I wasn't into the ER yet, but when things were getting bad and I was in pain, and I was, you know, Gene and I were talking, you know, both of us were like, what does this mean for moving, and what does this mean for Oregon?
And, I'm sure
at that time
there had to be tons of stuff racing through, like, at that time.
Absolutely.
And and being isolated from your partner while wondering all this stuff has got to be just like driving you crazy.
Yeah. And we love being together. We hang out quite a bit. So yeah, those 5 days felt like 5 months apart, you know. But you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder, and, sometimes, but yeah, it was, oh, but back to, like a promise I made to my partner back when the infection came raging back. I went to, Target, and I found this, you know, nice, like opal colored necklace and opal and gold colored necklace. And, I got that for Jean and gifted it to her. And, you know, with it, I gave her a promise. I said, even in the midst of all this, you know, medical stuff going on right now and money issues, this necklace is a promise that we're getting to Oregon. I, you know, can't tell you what day exactly, but we're getting there for sure. And that made me feel better, you know, making a claim like that. And I think it made Jean feel better too. And, yeah, it's just kind of like making a commitment to someone like that kind of makes these hard times easier, and knowing that we'll get there eventually, is, you know, all that matters.
For sure. I admire the faith, and I wish nothing but the best for the both of you. I hope you get there soon.
Thanks, man.
Well, last thing, I think you have prepared a new song, which I have not even heard yet.
Oh, nice. Yeah, this is pretty fresh.
Yeah, do you want to tell me about what we're going to hear?
Sure. Yeah, this is a new like solo track I've been working on. Elements of it I was writing during my stay at the hospital, and I was writing about elements of that stay and you know, pain and the dynamics at the hospital as far as, you know, doctors and nursing staff and how they communicate with one another. And, yeah, just borrowing a lot of those elements and kind of using almost like therapy for me, very therapeutic process to make this song. It's called Good Ones Floating Wearing Halos. And it's just dedicated to, all the nursing staff that took care of me during my ankle break. And then the 5 days I was there for the infection. It's incredibly heartwarming to see everything that the nurses do, you know, what their responsibilities and then the things they do extra. There was one nurse while I was freaking out with my broken ankle, the first time. Sorry, one second. There's this nurse named Sebastian who was in the ER, and I was freaking out with the financial department and the pain. The morphine hadn't hit me yet, and I was just feeling everything in my ankle from the break, and I was just freaking out, and I forgot what I was saying. I think I was saying something like, you know, this is my fault. I shouldn't have been longboarding. I can't believe I've done this to myself, and this is all my fault. And he just held my hand, and he's like, hey, man, this is not your fault. And, you know, this stuff like this happens. Everything's going to be okay. And it's just like the compassion I felt from nurses like him and many others, during my stay, that just, man, it was a godsend.
Wow. That's a perfect intro for the song.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks.
That's kind of like the emotion I was working with when I made this one.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Sean. I look forward to listening to this song, and I look forward to talking to you both over the internet and hopefully in person someday.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get there. It's been a joy being on the pod. Thanks so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to all the great content coming our way.
Thank you, Sean.
Anytime. Thank you.
And now, as promised, here's Sean's new tune, inspired by his recent experiences in the healthcare world. It's called Good Ones Floating Wearing Halos, which you can find on his Bandcamp at fanaes.bandcamp.com. His new pseudonym, which is backwards for Sean AF, is pronounced F-A-N-A, as I'm told. But anyway, fanaes.bandcamp.com will get you there. Also on Spotify. Here's the tune.
stuff. Hoping not too much pain. I wish I could make it all go away. Sorry I have to do this alone. You know I would be here. So. Hang in there, baby. I love you.
All right, that's the show. Thank you, Sean. Thank you to Arthur with two H's for the opening theme. Thank you to Joey Pegram for the closing theme. Thank you for listening. And until next time, take care, y'all. Part of the Back to the Light Podcast Network at backtothelight.net.